managed to cope with everything. You know, growing up in a Somali Muslim household, I always felt like a, you know, square peg in a pigeonhole.
Hey, welcome back.
It has been a month. So I have not put out anything new for a little while because I'm taking a little maternity break. And by the time this comes out, I will have a little baby, number two. So thank you for staying subscribed and for listening and for reaching out on our Instagram at Trail Running Women Pod. If you listen to the show and you aren't following us there, please go there. That's where we can get suggestions for new guests and all that other good stuff. If you would like a backlog of more of these fun replays, because they're awesome, check us out on the Patreon. There's also a couple of bonus episodes up on the Patreon. There are some life updates. There's going to be a birth story. There's an Ask Me Anything where there was a few trail tips questions and then a few kind of behind the scenes questions. So some fun stuff going on there. And all of that is on the Trail Running Women Pod Instagram. I wanted to replay this episode because Philzin was super awesome to chat to, and you definitely, I do a little bit of a intro on her in a second, so I won't repeat myself, but you're definitely going to walk away kind of feeling inspired and thoughtful and all the things that we like to feel when we're in the forest also. The cool thing was we talked before WAM 2 years ago, and then I actually ran into her on the course, and we both recognized each other, and it was just this really cool moment to have had this conversation and then see each other in a race. So I really love this episode. I think you guys are going to as well. Sorry if the sound is a little off here, but it's just for the intro. It will be better for the episode. Okay.
I spoke today with Philzin, and she is a fitness professional, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu enthusiast, an ultra runner, and a Brooks Running Canada brand ambassador. She discovered her passion for running as a form of therapy to deal with depression and anxiety attacks after a breakup in 2013. She now races ultras and draws attention to mental health and eating disorders through her experience, and it allows her to pass on by her newfound wisdom and joy to other women. She emphasizes body love, self-care, and mental health. She's 32 years old now. She was fantastic to speak with. She is a local to Vancouver, but she was in Toronto for a large part of her 20s and originally from Kenya. She is a Kenyan Somali Canadian Muslim woman. She has so much experience with depression, eating disorders, anxiety, and then how to kind of come through it. And she talks about writing herself love notes as she was training for her first 100K. It's a really inspiring story. I love chatting with her. I learned a lot, and I take sound bits, as you guys know, for the beginning, and she kept saying sentences that I was like, oh my gosh, that was mind-blowing. I need to make that the opening sentence. And then she would say something else. So you guys are really going to love this episode. She talks about her Project Love Run, which is a place where women can get together and share stories about their life stress related to heartache, romance, body insecurities, and basically just everything that we deal with. So like group therapy for free with runs and brunch. And it's across Canada in different cities. She's training for WAM 110 this year, which is a super challenging race. You can find her at Runner's Instinct on Instagram. Oh, let me just check that. That's out of my brain. I just want to make sure there's no S. Yeah, Runner's Instinct with an S in the middle. And her website is Project Love Run. So you guys are going to love this episode. Here is Philzin. Right, I'm here very early this morning with Philzin, who I was recommended to on Instagram, and I'm really excited to chat. And we were just saying before the show, we are speaking during the pandemic, so I'm so grateful that you still are taking this time to chat with me today. And it'll be nice for our listeners to just hear a really inspiring story that has nothing to do with the craziness going on. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So we always like to start with just a bit of a background on our guests of where they're from. And I know that's kind of a loaded question for you. So yeah, why don't we just start there? Where you're from, how you, I guess, identify, love your multiculturalism that you've got going on here. And if you were an athlete growing up.
Okay. So yeah, my name is Philzin Abdiaman, and I was born in Somalia but raised in Kenya. So I identify as a Kenyan Somali and Canadian as well, Muslim woman. I've been living in Vancouver very recently. I think it's going to be my third year now. But before that, I was in Toronto. So from Kenya, my sister and I moved to Toronto, and I was living there for about 13 years before coming out west.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you were a teenager then in Kenya for most
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I was living there from when I was about 2 to 17 years old, and then we moved to Canada and I was about 18. So yeah, big move for us.
What sparked that move?
We were done with our high school and we're looking for education, a post education schooling. So we picked Canada because also too, my dad's family had migrated here before, so they told us about the schools. And yeah, that was the main reason.
And just you and your sister came? Your parents are still...
At first, it was me and my sister, and then my mom joined us, and then my two brothers, but they moved back to Kenya. So they're no longer in Canada. So,
do you keep in good contact with them?
Yeah. You know, modern technology is amazing. So FaceTime or video calling on WhatsApp has been great. And I try and do those calls when I get up because the time difference is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So as soon as I'm getting up here, they're usually just having dinner, about to go to bed.
Oh, that's so cool. I love that. I find I'm just very close with my brother. So I always find when siblings break up, if it's a difficult time, but you're totally right with technology as we're seeing these days, it's very easy to stay in contact with people. So that's great.
Mm, yeah.
And then did both you and your sister come to Vancouver 3 years ago or just you?
No, it was just me. I decided to make the big move on my own. The very first time I came out west was for a race. I did the BMO half marathon in 2016. And I fell in love with the city at that time. And I wanted to move out here since. And for some weird reason, everything worked out. And I thought it was like just meant to be for me to come out west in 2017. And so I made the move.
Oh, that's so cool. I love that. And it's such a funny, like, it's such a common story where people are like, yeah, I came here once and I saw the mountains and the ocean and I was like, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful place to be.
So when you were growing up in Kenya then, were you playing sports? Were you running there?
No, actually, I have no athletic background whatsoever. I was active in the sense that, you know, you run to catch someone you're playing with outside if you're at school doing something during break. But I was one of the people that like to sit out of sports and not participate. And I think it's because of my shy nature. I was really shy growing up, and taking part in physical activity always scared the hell out of me.
Wow, you've come a long way then, hey?
Yeah, I think so.
So, and also I love, like, I have your bio and your background, so I'm kind of flipping back and forth here. But that you're now not only just a runner, but a fitness professional and a jiu-jitsu enthusiast. I also do jiu-jitsu. I have not had another guest that does any martial arts.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Where do you train?
I go to Gracie Baja at Main and Broadway.
Oh, okay.
And
awesome.
I started doing jiu-jitsu about, I think it was around 2018. Yeah, after my very first big ultra. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, that's so awesome. Like, what sparked you to head to a gym?
Well, during the race that I did, I met my current partner, and he's a jiu-jitsu enthusiast as well. So on some of our dates, we ended up talking about jiu-jitsu, and he encouraged me to try out for a women's only class, and I did it. And the first day I felt like I was, you know, just lost. I had no idea what I was doing. It was so different from running.
It's so crazy.
Yeah. And I was hesitant to go back, but then I tried out not a women's only class. I tried out one of the co-ed classes, and I think I was mostly drawn to it because of the feeling you get out of it, being a woman and being able to take down an opponent that, you know, is maybe much more larger than you. You know, you get a lot of, like, a confidence boost. And that is, I think, what kept me going back to it So yeah, I've been doing it since, more consistently last year, but then once I started training for the WAM 110K last year, I stopped a bit with the jiu-jitsu. And then I went back this year, but then it was like sort of inconsistent as well with everything going on in my life. So
yeah,
I am going to go back.
It's difficult. I found it because it's also like, it's so much about technique, but when you're still learning and you're always learning in that sport, it also is like, it can just gas you. And I find it, if you're mentally tired from doing a run workout that day, that like it's so, because it's such a thinking game at the beginning, right?
It was just
so challenging.
Yeah, and I also really love the strategic aspect of it. You know, that is extremely addictive, and I find you have your good days and your bad days, and no two roles are ever the same. You know, most of the time, you're presented with someone with a different body type, and it's a new position that you're working with. And so there's always opportunity to learn. And that is a big draw for me. And also too, the mind body connection. It's everything that I love about running, but in a different sort of setting. Yeah.
That's really cool. Our listeners will discover more about you as we go on, but I just like to hear someone, like, I feel like people weren't surprised when I took up jiu-jitsu because I was a little bit edgier and kind of a rough and tumble kid. But to find somebody who says that they were shyer and kind of coming from a different angle and love the exact same things, because it's about reading somebody else's body. And it's not about, I think people get confused with martial arts. Like, I did MMA, that you're like there to hurt the person, but you're not. It's like a game of chess, right? So that's just really cool to hear that from you.
Yeah, it's an amazing sport, and there's this flow state that you can get into, which I think is really incredible, and also too very addictive. Like, it keeps you wanting to get into that state, so you go for however many classes to feel that. I love it.
Totally cool. Well, hopefully we get to roll again soon. I know it's not something that's recommended right now. So let's get a little bit more into your story then, like, tie it together. So you weren't an athlete growing up, you had no athletic background, and obviously you would have been quite good at sports, I think, had you played them. And then you went through a bad breakup and found running. So, I mean, that's a big sentence. So let's dive into that. What went on there?
Okay. So, I think this was about 2013, and I was in a long distance relationship with a guy, and it didn't work out for various reasons. But for me, I felt like I didn't have the tools to cope with that breakup. And around that time is when I had my first experience with depression and anxiety attacks. So, that for me was the moment that I realized that I need to start working on building skill set or some sort of tools to help me deal with the emotions that I was feeling. Around that time too, my first instinct was to run away from the problem. And so I decided to move back to Kenya for a short while. Actually, I didn't know how long I was moving away for, because in my mind, I was just running away from everything. So I moved back to Kenya, and then, it was really difficult dealing with the depression back home, especially since I couldn't really talk about it with my family. They didn't really understand what I was going through, what I was dealing with. And depression isn't an easy conversation to have with your family if they don't really think of it as something, you know, that's real. So for me, I kept it inside, and I tried to busy myself with so many other things that were going on, but, you know, it always brought me down. And I felt at the end of it all that I had to, like, you know, face my fears and just deal with the emotions that were difficult. And that motivated me to come back to Canada and just look for a therapist that would help me understand what was happening internally. And around the same time, I started working out with a personal trainer, and she encouraged me to start doing runs as part of my cardio in between our training sessions. So there was a track behind where we lived in Toronto, and I would go do run walk loops around the track, and then I set myself a goal to do a 5K fun race. And back then I was one of those people that called 5Ks marathons. So every time I told people, I'd be like, yeah, I'm training for a marathon. but you know, it was a goal that I set myself, and I was doing it for me, and working with a trainer helped me see my physical strength, and then doing the runs helped me, because I was doing it alone, these run walks, and so it let me tap into my mental strengths as well. So that's the beginning of all my runs. The very next year after doing the run, I did, I signed up for a half marathon, and again, I trained and ran for it by myself. But for me, that was the year that I really learned the importance of the running community and the role that they play in helping you achieve your goals. Because doing the half marathon, I saw all these running crews out in Toronto, and I was like, I want to be part of that. I want to get involved. So I went from solo runs to running with a community. And around the time that I did my first marathon, it was a year after the half marathon, I signed up for, I think, 2 running crews in the city. And it was a different feel, different atmosphere, and a lot of encouragement and support. And so I think, again, a big draw for me with running is the community out there, because they're very supportive, and you know, they celebrate you and your achievements. And I think it's a great support network.
Totally. I feel like it's super intimidating at first, and then you realize that it's like, these are not groups of track stars running around. It's just regular people, right?
Yeah. And actually, I think that's one of the reasons why I picked the running groups that I went to in Toronto. The very first one I joined was Run to Beer, which for me was like, you know, very casual. And a lot of them were just running for the beer. So I was like, you know, I'll join this group and we'll do these casual runs. And then I joined another group, the NTRC, after that, the Niteras Run Crew. And they were more, they had a set plan. They would help you with workouts geared towards your training. And I really liked that about them. And of course, too, great people you meet on both sides.
So how old were you around this time? Do you know?
2013. Oh my gosh, I'm so bad with math, but I think I was around 27, 28.
Okay. So I found it really interesting in your background that you said your background as a Black woman made it difficult to openly discuss and deal with your depression and anxiety, and also an eating disorder. So First of all, like, what was it about being a Black woman that made it difficult to discuss about your depression?
I think, my hyphenated identity and the intersectionality that I live in has a huge influence on how I managed to cope with everything. You know, growing up in a Somali Muslim household, I've always felt like a, you know, square peg in a pigeonhole. It wasn't easy to express myself emotionally and physically. You know, there were always certain welcomed emotions like happiness and joy, and then anytime I felt anything different, like maybe sadness or anger, you know, it was always like, no, that's wrong, you shouldn't feel that way, you should be grateful for what you have. And then at the same time, I found that my body was policed in ways that only I understand now, you know, like being a Muslim, you know, the male gaze was always unwanted. And as soon as I reached puberty, I was taught to cover up certain body parts that would get me into trouble. I wasn't really enforced to wear the hijab. Like, my parents never told me you must wear the hijab, but modesty and dressing in ways that presented me as a decent Muslim girl were always encouraged. So for example, if my pants were too tight around the hips, or if I was wearing a shirt that fit too snug around the breast, someone would always like tell me, like, you know, you're not dressed like in a way that you can go outside. And yeah, I was a sensitive child growing up. I didn't realize that this subtle form of body shaming would later impact my life and become part of the reason why I struggled with body insecurities and body dysmorphia and an eventual eating disorder.
Right. It's so interesting how it's like, especially the first part where your family or the people around you are telling you, like, no, you should feel joy and thankfulness, like, that they're not trying to be malicious. My family was actually pretty similar too, where it's like, oh, don't feel sad. You have nothing really to feel sad about. You should be feeling happy. And it's an attempt to, like, keep you happy because things are generally good, but you can't just tell somebody to not have those negative feelings because it doesn't,
exactly,
it doesn't do anything with them, right? It just keeps them to somehow later emerge, I guess.
Yeah, and it really, I find, somehow stifles your growth because you need to experience all those range of emotions to be human, you know, is feeling. And being human is experiencing joy and sadness, anger and fear, you know, it's just the whole circle of emotions. So
yeah,
I think it's important to experience it all.
And interesting as well, that like the outcome, like to come to an eating disorder through a different way of body shaming than everybody else in our culture, I feel like is like the opposite almost, where we're like showing too much and then coming to the eating disorder with that sort of feeling shame, like it's not good enough. And somehow, like, how do women always end up, no matter how, like what the path is, to having a problem with eating? Like, there's something going on with our society that's really damaging people. So you were in your 20s when this started to emerge? And was this when you moved to Canada? Maybe it's something we're doing here wrong.
I think I started to notice more of it when I was living in Toronto. And not surprisingly for me, it didn't all happen when I was in my early 20s. This all happened in my later, like after 25, 26, when I was almost near 30. And I think part of that affected how I dealt with it as well, because I was, I felt like, you know, I should have my life together. I'm almost 30. This shouldn't be happening. So I think I also put a lot of pressure on myself, and that partly led to some of these issues that I had to deal with. You know, suffering from depression and anxiety isn't something you cope with easily. And, I think the eating disorder was around the time that I started to have depression and anxiety. Also too, like, you know, at the time that I felt like the eating disorder was starting to develop, I was at, I wouldn't say peak of my performance, but, you know, everything was going well with the running. I transitioned from road running to ultra distances, work. I was a Reebok brand ambassador at that time, and I managed to get on the cover of the Canadian Running magazine, I think towards the end of 2018. And I felt all this pressure to live up to a certain, you know, body image. In my mind, I felt like, you know, doing that, I have to look a certain way. And I think I couldn't, I was just afraid, like, what if it falls apart? And then that spiraled into other things. And I was always, struggling with the idea of living up to something and then dealing with the fear of not achieving that. So I put a lot of pressure on myself. And I think that's when my disordered eating habits turned into the eating disorder, which was bulimia.
Right. And I totally understand where you're coming from, where it's like, especially if you've been through a tough time and then something's making you happy and you, you start to put so much of your self-worth in that, that you're like, this can't go too, so I need to do everything in my power to keep it.
Yeah, and all of this happened around the time that I moved to Vancouver, and I think that was another trigger. And I was away from home, I was away from family and my friends, and it was a new city. I didn't know anyone, and just navigating the running community here, that whole fear that I experienced the very first time when I was seeking out the running community, I had to like navigate that all over again. But the running community that I found out here in Vancouver was really helpful. But mentally, you know, I wasn't in the right state of mind to have these conversations with anyone that I knew in Vancouver. So I sought out a therapist as soon as I moved here to start to see how I could work with someone to help me deal with these problems that I was experiencing within.
Right. Okay. So my next question was going to be, how did you come to a point when you were like, I need to get help or find a way to deal with this? And what did you do?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I felt like I didn't have all the tools or the skills that I needed to deal with this, and I needed to seek out some professional help. So my therapist that I found, actually, there were two therapists that I was working with. It wasn't easy finding a therapist, you know. I thought that my experience actually with therapists wasn't that great. So finding one, I felt like I would have to find someone that was able to understand my problems and my background and how that was playing into everything that I was feeling. And so I felt like I interviewed quite a few therapists before opening up and fully trusting them. But I did find this lovely, amazing woman. And my first session with her, you know, I just started crying. And that made me see that, you know, she's someone that I can trust if this is a natural response to just talking to her. Yeah, she encouraged me to write specifically to me, because I've always journaled. I've always liked journaling from a very young age, but she directed my journal entries and said, why don't you write love notes to yourself? And so I started writing these love notes to myself when I saw her. And even like on bad days, I would just write a few lines like, I love you, you're doing your best, stay strong, just small affirmations that would like lift me up. And it wasn't easy. Thank you. It wasn't easy, but you know, I stuck to it, and the consistency made me feel better every day. It made me feel stronger every day. And funny enough, after a few sessions with her is when I set the goal for myself to do the 100-kilometer Diaz Vista in 2018. So my goal was, you know, write 100 love notes to yourself. Once you get to that date, you're going to do 100 kilometers and run to celebrate your journey and your self-love. And so I did that, and I got to love note 100, and I still had a month to go to the race. But I just kept going, and up until today, I still write daily love notes to myself. I think I'm at like love note 900 and something. But it's just honestly a great reminder of, you know, who I am in love, you know, and where I am in love. I think that's something I didn't learn growing up. I don't think anyone's taught about the value of self-love. And so I really learned the power of, you know, self-love and self-belief and doing that 100K in 2018 actually brought more love into my life, because that's where I met my current partner.
Oh, so, no way.
Yeah. It just goes to show that when you put out all this positivity and you know, you're putting in the work on yourself, on who you are, and yeah, just trying to discover more about yourself, I think, then you're rewarded by the universe. And
totally.
Yeah, so that was an amazing thing that came out of all of that.
And I love that it's not like, I feel if you're struggling with something like bulimia, it can feel so overwhelming and like you need to do this huge overhaul to fix the problem. But I like that your message was kind of like just little bits every day, and that you just keep at it, and then eventually like that will have
and
a
it's,
big result.
It's, yeah, it's not like it completely disappears, because I have had moments where certain foods that I'd be eating would trigger, you know, old habits. But, you know, I have the tool set now that I could fall back on and use to help me overcome some of those problems. So it's just like running. It's not this thing you do, reach a goal and then move on to the next. It's you know, yeah, like a lot of people know this, people that run, it's a process and it's a journey, and you'll have your good days, your bad days. You just have to find a way to balance it all out. And for me, balancing things out is those daily journal entries and love notes to myself, and just reminding myself of my worth.
Did you find, so you're training for 100K, your first like very, very long ultra, the amount of food that you have to eat just to keep up with the training for that amount of volume, I find would be mentally difficult as well. Were you, like, for some people it really helps them because they realize that they just can't train if they're not fueling properly, and that it helps them shift from food to be something that is like numbing if they were eating too much, to something that is like making what they enjoy possible. Did you find that you had difficulty if you had, say, like a 40K training run and the amount of fuel that that takes?
Well, yeah, again, it was another lesson in learning to eat when I was hungry and listen to my body and the cues it's giving me. And so I was one of those people that ate to do well in my running. You know, before, I feel like I was just not eating enough for my physiology, and my running suffered as a result of that. I had a lot of injuries, and also too, it triggered all these disordered eating habits. And once I tapped into what my body actually needed and just ate to fuel me, to keep me going and staying strong during my training and my running, I think it changed my relationship with my body a lot.
Yeah, I find that that is kind of a consensus thing, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. And then since you've run, sorry, did you do WAM 110 last year, or that's on your bucket list for this year?
No, I did it last year.
Oh, you did as well. Okay, I looked on Ultra Sign Up and I didn't see it. I just saw the Zion.
I did not finish.
Oh, okay. Which is fair, because it's a really hard race.
Oh, yeah. But at the same time, I love the whole experience, and that's why I'm doing it again this year. Hopefully, if things change in the world, that race will be set to go, and I'll be able to finish this time around.
So you seem obviously like a very mentally strong person and been through a lot. You've just had Diaz Vestas canceled, you've had Buck and Hell canceled, and we have WAM floating out there, hopefully. So how have you dealt with the cancellations mentally and motivation, and what's your advice to people in that sense?
Well, yeah, of course it's disappointing and disheartening with everything that's going on, all these cancellations in the running community with regards to the races. But, you know, it just reminds you of what's important. So you go back to the reasons why you started running out in the first place. And it was never to do a race. It was to see how far you could go and, you know, just to test yourself mentally and see what you're capable of doing. And so I think my advice to people would be to just take it day by day and just, you know, like running, one foot in front of the other, one step at a time. You just go with what's handed to you and try and make the best out of it.
Yeah,
Yeah, you're totally right. And it's, I love, like what you just said there, you run to see how far you could go, not to race. That's, that resonates with me so much, because that was me at like 10 years old. Like, how far can I actually go? And then I would get my dad to like map it out in his car, because we didn't have Strava back then, because I'm old.
Well, that's really cool. Wow.
Yeah, it was fun. And it was like that feeling of like, oh my God, I just ran 8 kilometers. Like, I can do anything. And then the next time you run 10, and then you're like, whoa, like I could run 50. Like, it just keeps expanding your world, right?
Yeah. And just a lot of people fear the unknown and the uncertain times we're living in right now. But, you know, there's a lot of creativity that can come out of that. You find other ways of connecting, other ways of doing things. And that self-discovery, you know, is something to look forward to. So I think people should just, I know it's hard to do sometimes, but there's always a positive out of all of this chaos.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think it's scary and it's really sad. And it's also like every person that I ever asked, like, how are you today? The answer was always, oh my God, I'm so busy. And like, that's not what life is supposed to be about. And now you ask and someone like tells you how they're feeling and they like have time to like slow down and have a conversation with you. And I just sort of think that there's going to be a lot of like mental shifts that make people a lot more present after this as well. Like, I think you're right. There's going to be some positives that come for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
So you go through all this, you run your first 100K. You obviously get addicted to the long ultra running stuff, which I love and I can relate to. And then I feel like somewhere in there, you decided that you wanted to start giving back, and that's how you came up with Project Love Run, which looks awesome. I was just going through the website. So tell us a bit about that.
So I always in my head believed that I was the only one going through all of these problems and struggling with all of these issues. But, you know, that's never true. And you only learn about that once you start talking about it and sharing it with others. And so starting out Project Love Run, I actually started it in 2016. And I think it was also my way of trying to build up my tool set to deal with the depression, anxiety, and the disordered eating. So I started it with the aim of just offering other women a safe space to come together and have these important discussions to do with, you know, life stresses. It could be heartache, romance, body insecurities, and all the issues in the world. But just hearing each other talk about it and learning from each other, I think is a great way to grow and to learn about yourself and your self-love and your self-worth. So I founded it in 2016 with that goal. I think later on I came to realize that essentially that I was creating that safe space for a younger version of myself where I could feel love and belonging and a place to help me navigate the disordered eating disorder that I was dealing with, mental health problems I was dealing with. I have it now in 4 different cities, so it's grown, and I'm really happy about that. It's in Toronto, Edmonton, Calgary, and Vancouver. And I have friends that are leading it on my behalf in the other cities. So just being able to get all these women out to have these important conversations, I think, matters so much. I think it's a form of community therapy for some of these women, because therapy is not cheap. I try and invite guests out or experts in whatever topic that we're having each month. And they talk about their background and their knowledge and help pass on a few notes of advice to the women. So I think it's a really great community. And also too, I've made it so that anyone can come out. It doesn't mean you have to be a runner to do these. It's for every self-identifying woman. So the runs are usually very short and sweet. They're about anywhere from 2.5 kilometers to 5 kilometers. There's always a leader and a sweeper so that everyone stays together. And I started off by making that mind-body connection. I get them to do a warm-up where they connect with their bodies. And then at brunch, I share my story to get them to feel comfortable, to open up and have discussion. And then I let them have the conversations, and it just naturally flows that way. And at the end, I always leave them with an intention and tied back to, you know, self-love and self-worth.
Oh, that's so cool.
Thank you. Thank you.
And also, like, it would be a nerve-wrack. Like, it just takes a lot of guts to start something like that, I think. And you just kind of have to hope that other women will be as open as you and be willing to come out and show their face, right, to get it going. Mm-hmm. So that just, it's really cool that you can set that example for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at first, like, I had no one show up. There were a couple of runs that I end up going on my own. But I was consistent with it.
Oh, and that's amazing.
Thank you. I really believed in, you know, its growth, and put a lot of work into it, and just, you know, it just naturally grew from there. So now in Calgary, I think, is where we have the largest group of women. There's always about 20 women that come out for those runs. And then it's still quite small in Toronto, but I think it's because it's a big city and there are lots of other running groups out there. So mm-hmm. I always just put out the message that this is a safe space for women to come and learn about the most important relationship that they have, you know, the ones with themselves. Something I wish I learned growing up. So
totally, me too. I would have benefited from something like this, I think.
yeah.
So, and you're still, I saw on your website, you're going to continue on the runs virtually.
I am. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
I think encouraging people to still stay active and move their bodies, of course, to be safe first. So I've put the message out there to do these solo runs. And then I will guide them via email and have warm-ups for them to do and cool downs to do as well. So I think keeping them going is a great way to keep up the positive mindset, which people need.
So if you could then give one piece of advice to your young or mid-20s self, what would that be?
I would...
Tricky, hey?
This is tricky. Just love your body, love your being, I think, regardless of whatever the world says. And it's hard to do. It's really hard to love yourself, especially when you're feeling down. But just to just stay focused on doing that brings so many rewards. Yeah.
Yeah, true. Okay, last question that I have for you. Mm-hmm. After a super long race, one like 100 kilometer, or after you finish WAM 110 this year, what is your favorite post-race meal and drink?
I don't know. Like, before I would say a burger and maybe some sweet potato fries, but then lately, you know, my body's always craving like good food, good meals. So I don't know. I don't really have a favorite.
Really? Well, I get you'll think about it.
I really just want to eat everything nutritious and like vegetables, all the great vegetables out there, or you know those Buddha, I don't know, there's this place in North Van called
Buddha Bowl.
But yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So one of their bowls for after a race, that's the perfect post-race meal for me.
Yeah, I get that. And it sounds funny to be like, oh, I'm craving vegetables. But I feel like before a big race, you like try to cut down on the roughage a little bit for gut reasons. So it's like, yeah, afterwards, it's so refreshing to just get some like good, healthy stuff that you know is going to make you feel good. So I get that.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've had the burger and the fries after. I've had the pizza and beer. But, you know, there's always this feeling like, you know, your body didn't get everything it needed. And you feel sort of meh or heavy, just heaviness. But if you have those types of bowls after, I think, you know, you're just set. You can sleep all you want after.
The one guilty pleasure that I will never give up is like a Diet Coke is so thirst quenching after a race that's just amazing. I always find.
I've never really tried that after a race. I usually go for a beer after a race, but maybe I'll try that next time.
There's something about the carbonation, like sting in your mouth, but anyways. Okay. So if our listeners want to find more from you, where can they find you on Instagram or your website for, your project Love Run?
Well, on Instagram, they can find me at Runner's Instinct. That's my main page. I usually post on that, things about my races, my personal training. And then Project Love Run, that's where I post about the runs, monthly runs in the different cities I have them. So at Project Love Run on Instagram as well. And then the website, projectcloverun.com, that's where I post all the runs, the schedules on there, where they can sign up. I have weekly newsletters where I write to the Project Love Run community. I encourage people to sign up for those too, because it's a great way to just find out more about self-love and loving yourself.
All right. Awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much for sharing so openly. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that can relate to your story. And I'm just so glad that you were recommended to me. And thank you for waking up super early to chat.
Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for listening. If you want to leave us a little rating and review, that would be amazing. That's how people find us in Apple Podcasts. And you can find me on Instagram at hillsport55. Okay, cheers.